Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk twice weekly podcast for people who love needles, play with needles, and love those who love people who play with needles.
I feel like we're going to have to branch out from needles one of these times.
To what, thread?
I don't know. I'm not really sure yet.
Okay, you come up with it. We'll go with it.
I think whatever it is, we're going to have to tie it into our Fiber Talk merch. That's what's going to happen. Yes. I feel it. It's going to be like a pincushion or something like that.
Okay.
Right? All right. We were just sitting here talking about having a million ideas and not doing any of them, which I'm notorious for. So here, that's another idea of things.
See,
you know,
but that's the problem. We're both managers.
So, that's true. We are actually.
It's our job to come up with ideas, and then there are people who execute. So
yes, that's exactly that is exactly true. I have normally when I have an idea like this, and it is kind of a privilege, and now I feel really spoiled because at work I have an idea. And all right, so in our own defense, we've earned these spots. It's not like we just got plopped in.
Right.
You know, I have a team. I have a team of chemists where I say, I have this idea. It's going to be really cool. So make this.
Yep.
And then just outline the entire thing of how you want it. And then miraculously, it comes to life.
Yep. See, that's the problem that we have, though. So
is that we don't have a staff at home?
No,
to
we do not.
For us?
Unless your 13-year-old is a staff. No, you do not.
He's 14 and
already.
No, he's not because
already.
Now he's into like getting a girlfriend age.
Oh,
so
okay.
Believe me, the idea of getting him to do anything. Well, actually, no, this is really the prime time. It's, you want to go on a date? Let's see what things need to happen before that date's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm not above bribery.
14 now, huh?
14.
Jeez. He was just a little kid when I first met him. What happened?
He was, when you first met him, I was doing lectures and he would come and I would be at the podium and he would sit on the stage next to me.
Yep.
Playing with Thomas trains because I didn't have a babysitter or anybody I could leave him with, like a family member, so when I travel to give lectures. So I'd bring him with me, and he would sit on the stage and play with toys until I was done, which was very weird for people, but they got used to it after a while. And then after a short period of time, by the time he was about six, I would give him the laser pointer, and he would point out the things in the slides that I was talking about. So if
see,
I was talking about...
Yeah, you're developing staff right there already, see?
Right. Well, it gave him something to do because then he could point out pictures of, you know, whatever it was that I was talking about. And he would point to the element that I was talking about at the time. And then it got to the point where the last lecture he came to was a year or so ago. And he hadn't been to one in a little while. And the best I got out of him was, you know, I thought that was going to be terrible and it didn't suck. That was actually kind of interesting, Mom.
Thanks, son.
I was like, wow, that's about the best compliment you're going to get out of a 14-year-old boy.
That's touching. Yes. That's just heartwarming. Just absolutely heartwarming.
But again, this is how long we've known each other. So, and yours are all grown and.
Yep.
Have families
kids of their own.
Yeah.
That's
insane. Okay.
So before we go any further, more than glad to thank everyone for listening and spreading the word. We're recording this on the 30th of October, and our activity, podcast and website, is by a long shot the most we've had since we started in January. So thanks to everybody for listening, supporting, and spreading the word. Really, really appreciate it. It's been, we've grown rapidly, and October was just huge. So thank you.
So we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. So pop in with ideas, suggestions, things you want to talk about, things you want to hear about, events, anything really, because we are doing this not just for ourselves, but for everybody else. So if there's things that you want to hear about, we'd like to hear about that. So help us, you know, guide us into making something that everybody wants to listen to every week.
Yep. Really appreciate it though. It's great. So
yeah.
I think it's been a couple of weeks since we've talked about what we're stitching. I'm still I'm working on the grandson Connor's stocking. I have cleared the halfway point.
And, okay.
Oh man, and I want it done. There's stuff I want to stitch, and I want it done. And so I've been at it like this is Sunday afternoon.
It was
stitching, football, and drag racing till 10:30.
Yep.
From about noon till 10:30. Yep. So
that is good.
I made a lot of progress, and as soon as we're done tonight, I'm gonna go bang away at it some more. I want it done. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So and still, I will say again and again and again, if you want a really nice stocking, Christmas stocking. And not going to take a lot of time, going to stitch up fast and look really great. The Shepherd's Bush stockings. Charts are easy to follow. Done with almost all pearl cotton, number 5 pearl cotton.
You don't have to deal.
You're not laying things. You're not stranding anything. It's done on a fairly open weave linen. So you're not dealing with little tiny holes or anything. And they go fast and they really look nice. So and the chart is like 7 or 8 bucks to get the chart, and then if you get the I think I mentioned before, if you get the little bangles and gangles that go on there to decorate it, it's like $20 for that. It's just I don't get that, but whatever. But they really make up a real nice stocking and a good size stocking. I mean, they're big stockings, so if you're looking for something like that, people who can get at it and stay at it consistently day after day, I would venture within 3 weeks tops, stitching 2-3 hours a day, you could have it done. I mean, they go fast. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. And look, they're really good, especially the newer ones. It's like, I think they do one every year. And the newer ones, they're using, over dyes and those kinds of, different kinds of threads. And they really look nice. I'm really pleased with the way it's coming out, but geez, I want it done.
I know it's hard when you're working on a deadline, and it makes you appreciate, designers or people that are doing things like that.
Right.
Because they're really stuck to something, aren't they?
Yeah.
You have to kind of work with what you have. It's your job.
Yep. Well, that's what I said after. It took almost 30 years to do my son's stocking.
The first one.
I would never do another piece that had a deadline to it. And I mean, this one's not going to get finished by Christmas. It'll get stitching will be done, but it won't be made into a stocking by Christmas, but at least it'll be done. And Connor will have it for next year when he's 1.5 and might actually recognize it. I think
you should just pin it to the mantle.
Yeah.
Would be funny.
So, but they're just a great stocking. They do a nice job. There's, on this one, the Santa is pretty good size and it's dense stitching. And then there was a building next to it, or is a building. It's still there. That was dense stitching. So that slowed me down, but now I'm just about through all of that. So now the rest of it is just little sheep on a hill and a little tiny train and stuff like that.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, and those all go really fast. But, I highly recommend those. Like I said, the charts are really done well. They're clear, understandable. You work with a variety of threads so you're not bored stitching ecru, for 3 hours.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So that's – I'm working on it, and the rest of them are screaming at me. There's a couple of reproduction samplers that, oh man, I'd just like to get my hands on, but I can't get to them. So,
yes.
So talk to me about you've been needle painting. Yeah. I want to hear what's that been like?
Right. Cause you're making fun of me because I have 7 projects going at the same time, but you never hear me talk about being bored. Do you?
Well, I have easily 7 that are all partially done. I just have to get this one done. So
yeah, you're under a deadline. So yeah, so I'm working on. So this is all through the Craftsy class, the stump work class with Celeste Chalsani. So most of the I'm trying to think of how the piece goes together. It's surface embroidery that you start out with surface embroidery. You trace the design on your silk. And so it's a couple of like a whip chain stitch and pretty simple stitches, a satin stitch with leaves that are kind of they're detailed only in the sense that it's not just like a an oval leaf. The leaf itself has a lot of angles and things. And that's all solid, single color. There's a couple of raised pieces, so you're doing felt padding and things like this. And what I started to do, because I'm jumping around the piece and I'm not following the directions and going in the order I'm supposed to, because of exactly what you're talking about. Just, you get bored of doing one thing. The piece has stumpwork poppies, and the poppies themselves are the item that is the most three-dimensional. So they're raised. So they're sewn on wired slips. So what that is you couch a piece of wire, like floral wire, down to fabric, and then buttonhole stitch all the way around that, pretty solid, it's not like a blanket stitch like you'd have on a blanket. It really is like a solid buttonhole. And then you needle paint inside of the petal. So each of those is the petal. So there's nine of them to make up these two poppies. And it's three different colors of red, silks, beautiful silks, actually. And really just you're creating a fade from a lighter color red on the outside to a deeper red at the junction of at the point of the petal, right? That's the closest to the center of the flower. So what's my experience so far? Couching down wire is pretty easy. Getting the buttonhole stitch perfect is really hard. It's easy to get it not
Semi close.
adequate. It's actually difficult to get it neat. So that's taking a little bit of practice because you really have to pay attention to exactly where the needle is going every single time and make sure you pull the thread in exactly the right direction and that the thread doesn't loop the wrong way. And that's if you do that, then you get the beautiful edge that if you see them done by people who have done this for a while, they get these edges that are just completely crisp and perfect. So mine are not that. But that's okay. But the needle painting, so there's two challenges in these particular things. So if you can imagine a teardrop shape, that's kind of what the flower petals are like, with the point is the center of the flower and the outer wider part is the outside. So the challenges are your needle painting, so your or like silk blending, right? Colors, silk shading. So you're blending colors from outside to inside, so that's one challenge, and you're just using long and short stitch to do that, which takes some practice. But once you get the hang of it, again, it's easy to do adequate. And I think the challenge and the interesting thing for me going forward is, okay, now I've got it adequate. How do I make it lifelike? Because if you see like stump work that's been done by someone who's very good at it, it's not only just cartoony, you blended the right colors. They blend it in the way that it really becomes lifelike, like a rose petal would be. Like where does that blend occur? And is it a jagged blend or is it a very slow fade? So those are the nuances that I'm looking forward to once I've gotten some more practice being able to concentrate on those things. So it's that. But the other thing that's a challenge about this is you're going from a wide area to a narrow area to a point. So not only do you have to change color from one end to the other, but all the angles of the stitches change. So if you imagine the stitch that would bisect the petal from top to bottom, that's straight. All the stitches have to point towards that center point. So you have to stitch. You can't just stitch long and short stitch. You have to stitch in compensating stitches that allow you to change the angle of the stitch so that all the stitches are pointing to the center. And I will tell you, having done it terribly, that when you do it terribly and you try to and you catch up after a while because you realize, oh, these are not pointing in the right direction, and then you try to sort of catch up, it really you lose it completely. But if you're able to maintain that angle and get all the stitches visually pointing towards that point, it's really phenomenal. And it's once you sort of like, so in the class, Celeste explains how she goes about doing that, how she got. And of course, I didn't read, you know, or listen to that part until after
I did it.
The first one, because I was kind of, like I said, I was bouncing around. So then she actually goes through this whole description of doing these compensating stitches. And that's how she's able to get everything lined up. And once sort of the light bulb went off, which really wasn't a light bulb, and it was the, hey, Christine, why don't you, you know, follow the directions for once. Wow, it's so much easier. And the result is so much better. The result is so much better. So that one little tip of just adding compensating stitches to change the direction of your satin stitch was tremendous. So
don't you just hate when the instructions are helpful? Don't you just hate that?
Because they were, it's odd with the way the Craftsy class is lined up, because it's a little bit, it's a little kind of out of order. So I didn't know that there was an instruction that would have been helpful to me until later. So I guess that's a defense, but it's not really.
Lame.
It was a lame defense. But that said, so now that's done, now that I kind of have that idea, I can put more focus into the actual painting of it. And it's really fun. It's a fun stitch to do. I guess, you know, I had kind of expected that doing a lot of satin stitch would be really boring after a while. But what it ends up being is this sort of rhythmic thing where we talked about needlepoint, where you're doing basket weave for a long time and, you know, you just sort of go into this like auto mode where you're just doing the stitches and you're not focusing the same way you would on a counted piece. When you're doing this needle painting, you're paying attention somewhat to sort of how you're distributing the colors and the angles and things, but you do get into a rhythm. And the more I've done it, the more I can focus, like your mind can wander a little bit while you're doing it because you're not focused on every single, you know, placement of the needle. Becomes more natural and intuitive. And it's fun. So,
Do you find that needle painting is forgiving in that I need a little more dark thread here so you can just stitch in a couple more and you're fine? Or
sometimes. Yes and no. And like I said, I've gotten better at it. So another good pointer that I got was that normally with needlepoint, you come out of a clean hole, you go into a dirty hole. This you do the opposite because, and it's explained perfectly well. And then you say, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. If you come up out of a blank place on the fabric and then go down in between threads that you've already stitched, your needle and then your thread that you're stitching kind of separate the area and it leaves gaps. If you come up through what you've already stitched, you're basically doing the exact thing that you're trying to avoid with needlepoint, which is you don't want to fray what you've already done. Here, you do want to fray it a little bit because that fray allows it to sort of blend a little bit. Does that make sense? So as your needle comes up,
splitting the thread is just fine then.
It's actually beneficial because it allows it to blend better. Because when it frays, then the colors blend a little bit better.
Okay.
So once I started doing that and stitching reverse from an area stitched into a clean area, the blend got a lot neater too. Okay. So the coverage was better. I didn't see as many gaps. Yes, it is forgiving, but not completely. So you can't just go over it if you find that your distribution is completely wrong, because then you're going to get areas where you have a lot more threads built up. And so you won't have a flat surface anymore. Now you're going to get, it's going to be lumpy because now, like let's say there's an area that should have been much more dark red and I had already stitched it in a lighter red. And then looking at it, later I say, oh no, there's not enough dark there to balance it out. And I try to stitch over it. You can do some of that. But after a while you start just laying thread over thread over thread, and then it doesn't look as good anymore. So the other thing that I tend to do is I stop quite often when I'm doing the blend and hold it farther away from me, take off my glasses, you know, put it under a different light, turn it a different, you know, different angles to see how the blend is, because it's easy to get sort of locked into the tiny area you're working. And I guess it's sort of like an artist stepping back from a canvas to look at it. I would know because I have no artistic ability whatsoever. But
you can imagine. You can imagine. Yes.
My romanticized view of artists, you know, you see them stepping back from the canvas and looking at it to judge the composition. It's kind of like that. You look back and say, "Oh, okay, what's the balance? Do I need to create more or less?" And I also am starting to like. I start in the centers of things, and then I move to the edges. So that, you know, so I guess I'm just trying experimenting with different things. And every one that I do, I try something a tiny bit different. And sometimes they are better and sometimes they're not. But these are flower petals. So if one of them comes out terrible, I'm going to not use it, you know, because I need 9. So if I stitch 12 and just discard the 3 that aren't so great.
Right.
Then just, that's just fine.
More experience, yeah.
Yeah, and it's literally on a 3-inch embroidery hoop. I have 4 petals on a 3-inch hoop, so it's not like it's a ton of thread or it's difficult to carry or any of those things. I'm not struggling with it. So
you're okay. Let's back up the truck a little bit here. So you're putting a piece of cloth, ground cloth, on the hoop.
Yes.
And then you're couching down the wire. 4 different petal-shaped wire forms.
Correct.
And then you're doing the buttonhole stitch to make the edge on the wire.
Right.
And then stitching. I get that. So then when you want that petal off, you know, separate, so it's its own entity, then what you just cut the ground cloth?
Yep. That's exactly correct. So that's why that buttonhole stitch is so critical to get neat and to get very dense and complete, because you want to cover the wire. You don't want to extend too far past the outside of the wire because then you're going to end up cutting your own threads, right? Mm-hmm. And you want it to be nice and even and have a beautiful curve to it and not like a jagged edge where you've stitched it. So when you're stitching the buttonhole, you want to make sure it's very, very even on the outside. So that you do that, and then that's exactly correct. When you're done stitching it, then you take very sharp scissors and then cut as close as you can to the buttonhole stitch without cutting your own threads, because once you cut one, then you're kind of messed up because it's all continuous, right?
Right.
But the way the buttonhole sits, you can almost get underneath it. So that's another thing that I've learned is it's not even tension really. When you're stitching it, what I've found works really well is, so the buttonhole, you come up, then you go down, you come up through the loop that you just created with your previous stitch and pull it. So it's like a blanket stitch also. It's almost the same stitch really. What I've found works really well to lay it down nicely so that it's all even is when I pull the thread on that second stitch, instead of pulling it up perpendicular to the cloth like you would normally, I pull it against the cloth, and that just lays that buttonhole down nice and flat against the cloth. And that has made a world of difference with keeping it neat around the edge.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's a thing that people do. But I know that when I did that, I was like, oh, this looks a lot neater because all the stitches lay flat that way for me. And the other thing that I learned was I want to keep the buttonhole stitch very close to the outside of the petal. But on the inside, I'm experimenting with not stitching quite as close to the wire, because I used to think that, you know, you had to be right up against the wire on the inside. I'm finding that if I give myself a little bit of room on the inside, it helps when I'm ready to start stitching the satin stitch on the inside, because that way you don't have as much of a gap. And so the way the course tells you to do it is you couch it, then you buttonhole stitch it, and then you just do a split stitch right along the very inside of it. And that helps you get coverage in that area too. And it gives you something to stitch over.
Okay.
So by extending the buttonhole stitch a tiny bit more into the inside, it's also covering that area so that when you come up and you start your stitch, you're not seeing any of the ground cloth through there.
Mm-hmm.
So just little things like, you know, by making the mistake and saying, oh, when I stitch that, I can see the ground cloth because I tried to get too close to the wire and that didn't work. Let me try a different way. So, yeah. You know, I'm making lots of very useful mistakes.
Well, that's good. And vicariously, I'm getting over the intimidation factor just listening to you. So thank you for that.
Well, it's really not.
When you look in a book, I mean, it looks intimidating, but it doesn't sound so bad.
It isn't. And I think it's giving yourself permission to try it and say, all right, that wasn't as neat or as graceful as I would like it to be, but the next one will be because I kind of looked at what I did and I know what I can do better. So I think you go from a point of, you know, especially if you've been stitching a while and you're familiar with the needle and thread and tension and cloth, on your first shot, you should be able to get it reasonable. And then my goal really is then to be able to look at it and say, no, that's stitched elegantly. You know, it's seamless. It's blends beautifully. And there's so many good examples, either on Instagram or in some books, that you can see needle painting done well. And it just flows beautifully and everything looks like it looks very painterly, like watercolor. So that to me is an elegant application of it. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think a lot of it too is your color choices. You know, whether colors are going to flow into each other or are not, that you have to, you know, get through, I think, a little bit of experience. But the other thing too is the material. So doing it in silk versus cotton, silk I think is a little bit more forgiving because you get a little bit more light reflection and it seems to blend easier just because it's smooth.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine if I did this with cotton, it wouldn't be as easy because I don't think the cotton would be as forgiving, but I'm guessing because I'm only doing it with silk right now. So you have nothing to lose by trying, right? You can just do it on a doodle cloth.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, I fully intend when I start to, to do plenty of doodle cloth playing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's the same old things. The things that I've found helpful are I have this drum tight in a hoop. Like, there is no give to this fabric whatsoever. And that just leaves one less thing that I have to worry about where I'm struggling to, you know, keep the fabric tight.
Yeah, right.
So it's nice having it on a teeny tiny little hoop like this because it's easy. In fact, it's a plastic hoop, which I thought originally would be not so great. But the plastic hoops have a ridge on the inside, so it's easy to snap the fabric down and get it really, really tight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's tremendously helpful too.
Okay.
Give it a whirl.
Oh, I will. As soon as I get the stocking done.
I know. And the Craftsy class, I mean, I think on sale, they have sales, was like $20 for the class. And it's all the videos and all the stitch guide and everything. And then you just buy your materials and, you know, you can buy cheap or not cheap silk and you can buy cheap or not cheap threads. You could do the whole class in DMC if you wanted to. You know, it depends on what you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
So you can really, the cost of entry is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you find that, hey, this is kind of enjoyable and I like it, then, you know, you invest in some nicer materials and then go for it.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I'm working on at the moment.
All right. And Celeste, a week from Sunday, will be our guest. So
Yes. I'm very excited.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. That should be fun.
So, yes. And we invited her to speak, and I sent her a picture of where I was in the piece, and she didn't say it was terrible. So, hey. She didn't say, wow, that's, you know, great, great.
Yeah. She's an excellent, encouraging teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So,
Yep.
no, it's fun. I've been having a lot of fun with it.
Now I could tell just from your post that you were, so I was curious about what you were going through. Yeah. All right, we heard from the minority of the minorities in the stitching world.
Okay. The unicorn.
This is a male stitcher, young. Like, I don't know. I'm going to guess late 20s, early 30s at the most. Probably late 20s. But anyway, yeah, the minority of minorities. I'm a minority, but this is that next step. So this person, not going to use his name. You guys talk about how needlepoint is a dying craft for the older crowd, but there really are younger stitchers and male stitchers. We just need more patterns that are gender neutral and not so pretty, in quotes.
Ah.
I always laugh when you guys talk about how there isn't a younger generation of stitchers. There is, but nobody talks about us. I need a break from my desk job and from tech, so that's why I stitch. And then, I thought it was important to tell that it makes us feel more of an anomaly when you keep telling how old we are as young stitchers, or how odd we are as young stitchers. And yeah, that's kind of unfair because it, yeah. But
Well,
it.
yeah, and I think that's actually a really good point because we have talked about designs that are appealing to quote unquote young stitchers, but you're right, they're all very feminine and girly. And especially the ones for younger people, they get even more feminine and girly. You know, that's when you get all the pinks and the greens and the cute preppy things and you know, that's what we've been talking about a lot as far as like what's appealing to younger stitchers, you know, as opposed to something else. And you know, and so what he was talking about were some of these more masculine type designs. So what qualifies as a masculine type design? Is it the style or the challenge of it? Like what makes it appealing? Like I know you enjoy a lot of these geometric things, and I think part of it is the design, but part of it is that it's difficult and that it's precise. And that makes a lot of sense because that's, you know, sort of what we typically associate with, you know, male related activities, that they're, you know, a little bit more like that. But it got me thinking about how even just the choice of color, can really make something not gender neutral, right? So we were looking at before when we were chatting, talking about a piece that was a lot of just grays and metallics and interesting like that. So it started me thinking, okay, what would be a piece that would be appealing to a guy, right? So then I think, all right, well, what would my kid not, you know, hate if I hung in his room when he wasn't looking, right? And it would have to be something. I mean, you could do things with that were like armor inspired, you know, the textures of those things, maybe the textures of like animal skins or, you know, just the colors that, you know, what are appealing to young men.
Yeah, it's and that's hard to define because
It is.
he pointed out that he would like to see more of the metal form design that Part 5 is in the latest Needlepointers magazine. It's a Jeff Kulik design. I thought it was interesting that he liked it and it was a design done by a male.
Yes,
And but
right.
yeah, it is very I mean, it's a charted design and obviously a metal type look to it. And yeah, there's that. It's almost like a castle wall that goes around the outside. And so he said that more of that kind of stuff is what is appealing to him. And then I got to thinking, I wonder if that's why I am so drawn to charted designs as opposed to painted. Is if it's because I can find more examples of what I like. Consciously or not, examples, you know, because I'm not sure. I don't think it through. I just see it and I like doing that. And so I'll do it. And so I wonder if that's part of it. You know, there's a psychology behind that that draws the male mind in. And
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, just look at the difference between what you're doing and what I'm doing. So what is drawn me into and that I'm, completely fascinated with and focused on is all these graceful floral things. And what you are very much focused on are the geometric type things. So we are very stereotypical, I guess, in that regard. So what would it take? What kinds of things would a guy find appealing? Because I can, now I'm thinking about it, walking into like a typical painted canvas needlework shop as a guy. And I've done this, walk in with a friend and they're like, yeah, nothing here is appealing to me at all. And I get that because it's not the colors that you would associate with, okay, think about a very stereotypical men's lounge or a library or something like that. What would you hang there? You wouldn't hang a picture of a kitten. You wouldn't hang something that is like, very flowery unless it was, sort of historical and antique-y in nature. And even then it would be like, so what would it be? What would you decorate your house with? I don't know.
But I look at this metal forms and yes, that, that kind of thing,
Yes, yes.
those geometrics, maybe heavier colors. The kind of stuff that I end up stitching, that's the whole thing, is
Almost
it?
like metal, like metalwork or things like, right.
And
Or, the other way to look at it is if you're a woman stitcher and you want to make something for a guy in your life, what would you make? You wouldn't make something that's like a pink and green thing with bows on it. And so, you don't do needlework as gifts for men.
No. And
Because.
when you talk about like stump work, now for me stump work is appealing and doing flowers is appealing, but that's because
Right.
that's what I studied in school. That's really at the core of what I do. What I love is biological systems, animals, plants. I just, I love that. I love learning about them and studying them. So to create out of thread, a three-dimensional flower is a real plus for me. I mean, photography wise, I mean, photography, that's what I love doing is macro shots of flowers. But it's also the challenge. See, there's that challenge, which is why I was so interested in what you were experiencing with the work you're doing, is because there is a significant challenge there, making small little petals and making several of them that you can put together and have it pass for a real flower. And when you when you look at people like Celeste and see their finished products, if you just take a quick glance, for the most part, that's a flower.
Yeah,
And
and when you get into some of the animals, if you've seen some of the
yes.
birds and
Yes.
hedgehogs and things, oh my goodness. There was one or two that are in the EGA catalog of classes for next year's seminar that are so lifelike. It's insane. So that I can almost see would be appealing because that's almost like taxidermy or like wood,
Yes.
like decoy models and things like
Yep.
that. So in that regard, I think stump work would become masculine.
Well, you
But the
take,
other,
Trish Burr just put up a design of a kingfisher. Holy smokes. I mean, I looked at that and I showed it to Margaret and she said, that looks like real feathers.
it looks like the real thing. Yeah, it's really remarkable. I think that's interesting. But here, so let's try this idea on for a second. Think about tattoos, right? So tattoos are very trendy and lots of people have tattoos and it's no longer just a guy's thing anymore. Now there's plenty of women that have tattoos. But if you look at the types of tattoos that they have, unless somebody is doing something very gender opposite, right? So unless it's a woman trying to get something really tough to be tough looking, I guess, or I don't know. The typical women's tattoos are very fluid and flowing and colorful and those sorts of things. Whereas you look at men's tattoos, they tend to be, even by the same artists, less colorful unless they're like Japanese style. More, you see a lot more black and white things, a lot more graphic type things. So maybe that's sort of a way to approach it is look at tattoos as inspiration. So if you did a design that was like a Japanese style tattoo, but you did it as a needlepoint, that might be appealing because lots of men have that as their tattoo. Or just the way that things are stylized. You know, how many things are almost tribal or Polynesian, things of that nature. You know, maybe the difference between those two things is a good guide for what might be appealing to men, just as a way of looking at a comparison between the two. Yeah, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I think that the description of stump work and needle painting as taxidermy is an interesting angle or tie-in for males.
Yeah. I think so too, because maybe you don't want to make a flower or a bumblebee, but being able to do a fish that looks like fish scales, you know, or a fox that actually looks like a fox and is raised, that is really, really difficult. So it appeals to that element of your brain that wants something very challenging. But B, when you're done and you have this thing that looks like a fox, it's not something that's so girly that, you know, don't know what to do with it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think birds is a great one, because right. there are quite a few birds out there that have been done well, so maybe that's a start in that direction. So I don't know, it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, well, and the fact that yes, there are young people, and in another exchange I had with this guy, I don't have disposable income. And sometimes I'm choosing between my hobby and paying the bills, which is, and there's some reality there too, as a young person. I mean, there's very much some reality there.
Not only young people, there's some not so young people that have the same choices to make. So, you know, you have to choose pieces where you get a lot of bang for your buck, something that's going to, you know, a piece that's not going to whip together in 5 seconds, because you want to spend a little bit of money and have a long period of time to work on it.
Yeah. And you know that to branch off of young people in stitching, but you know, we've talked about infrastructure, and I was doing some thinking, because after we talked to Mary Corbett, one T, about the slate frames, they're gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Oh, those things are beautiful.
And expensive. And,
yeah, they are. Yeah. But worth every penny, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
But I was doing some thinking about, you know, the question about, does it have to be expensive? Does needlework have to be expensive? And it really doesn't. I mean, you can do beautiful needle, and people have done it, because if you think about it, you know, just take reproduction samplers. I mean, those were girls probably stitching in hand, probably didn't even have a hoop. Whatever thread they could latch onto, whatever cloth they could latch onto, and
the hoop itself is just a bent piece of wood, so I mean, those are inexpensive to do,
and so you can do beautiful work without spending a fortune beyond cloth and thread,
it goes back to what, you know, so when I started in wreath keeping, I did not have disposable income, you know, hardly at all. I had an infant child, and I cleaned houses to earn money for wreath keeping stuff. Right. So, and wreath keeping is an expensive hobby. There's no way around that. So what I used to do is there's a lot of things I built myself. B, there's a lot of things where people jump into a hobby and say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to totally get into it. And then they get totally into it. And then a year later or a few months later, they say, I hate this. And then they want to offload all that stuff. So things like Letgo or Craigslist or eBay or Facebook groups that people are getting rid of stuff, like, it's worth looking at those things and keeping an eye, or estate sales, garage sales, all kinds of things like that, because there are plenty of people, or, you know, sometimes it's an estate sale where, you know, someone's family member has passed away and they have, you know, this gigantic stash and all their equipment. I bought a lot of embroidery hoops, I think for $3 on eBay. And I kind of didn't, I mean, I knew I was going to get a couple of good things and a couple of, you know, maybe really, really old things that wouldn't be functional, but would be kind of cool. But it was like maybe 12 hoops for $3.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, if I got one good one out of that, it was fine.
Right.
You know, you can do things like that, and you can build your infrastructure slowly. And, you know, especially for people that are handy, I was looking at slate frames, and then my next thought was, okay, is this something I can build? Because it really is just, you know, a couple of pieces of wood. There's holes drilled. It's not even that as difficult a construction as a scroll frame. So maybe you can build things. You know, there's maybe you have a family member who can build something for you.
Right. Well, and you have woodworking skills, so you could probably pull it off without too much trouble.
Well, then that would just give me an excuse to have to buy tools, which was always a good thing for me. So, it really wouldn't be that. If you have somebody that has good woodworking tools to build a slate frame, I don't think it would be all that difficult. And the nice thing is then you could build it any size you wanted.
Right.
Because the materials that go into it are not that expensive. It's just the labor and the skill that to make it.
Right.
So it's just that, you know, how many people have overlapping skills that they can do needlework and also are master craftsmen woodworkers? It doesn't happen
not often.
So,
I mean, this hobby, that's what we have to, I think we forget too often, is this hobby, you know, many years ago was done just sitting by candlelight, holding a piece of cloth and some thread and some needles, and and probably some pretty dull, clunky scissors if you had scissors. I don't know what they even probably cut them with their teeth half the time. But
I used to do that when I was a kid.
Yeah, so it really, you know, we've talked about stands and slate frames and scroll frames and millennial frames, all this, millennium frames, and all those things. And yeah, they make doing the job or doing the hobby really a whole lot easier. There's no doubt. But you take Nicole Neville. I mean, she stitches all those samplers all in hand. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't need, she just has a bag with her threads and her ground cloth and her chart, and she just stitches in hand. She didn't have any infrastructure at all.
No.
It's easy. My I think it's easy. Yeah.
Yeah. My travel bag is a gallon Ziploc bag right now.
Mm-hmm. It's really easy to forget that this can be done without a lot of expense. And yeah, you talk about estate sales. How many times have you read about somebody who went to a Goodwill store and hit the mother load for $10 and came home with a whole pile of DMC floss and some needles and whatever it might be just by being at the Goodwill store at the right time? And
yes.
This stuff doesn't wear out. If it's kept clean and dry, it doesn't wear out. So yeah, you have a
summertime,
nice little stash.
Yeah, especially, I mean, in New York, we don't have things like this, but if I go to other parts of the country in the summertime, you guys have like flea markets or like, you know, the big flea markets where it's, you know, a couple of acres of stuff.
Yeah.
I given the opportunity, I always just scour those things for fabric. Because a lot of times you can find things like an old tablecloth that somebody had embroidered already, but then you can cut it, wash it, and now it's not a tablecloth anymore, but it's fabric you can use for something else, you know, and that's sometimes it's, you know, old and in terrible shape. Sometimes it's old and in terrible shape, and that's actually a good thing because you're trying to do something that requires that aesthetic. But sometimes it's old, and because it's old, it was made really well, and you know, it's pretty durable and you can use that and, you know, it costs you $1. So you can build stashes that way.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of kind of like keeping good eBay searches, you know, and then pop into your email every day and see what comes up. I mean, I keep eBay searches on for a couple of different things just to see if anything pops up, and it's paid off in a couple of instances. And a lot of this stuff that we talk about that are infrastructure that we tend to talk about as almost necessary, if I have to be honest, are necessary because we're old, because we can't see, right? How much of this is because we can't see or because we're not comfortable sitting on a couch or cross-legged on a floor or, you know, scrunched up into the corner of a couch, you know, we're picking these infrastructure things because, all right, in order for me to sit for a long period of time, it has to be kind of ergonomic and I need a light so I can see. But if I was to give this to my kid to do, you know, he'd be curled up in a ball somewhere, you know, in the dark, and he'd be just fine because his eyes aren't old like mine. So there's always ways to do it inexpensively. It's, you know, that it's just, that's just how it is. There's always a way to do it. And this is, you know, how I've done most of the things that I've ever done, you know, being a single mom, is you find ways to do things. So there's always a way to do it. I mean, you could even make a frame out of PVC pipe if you wanted to, and that would probably cost you less than $10, less than $8.
Yep.
You could make like a faux scroll frame out of PVC pipe that you got from Home Depot. It's always a way to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just that's what I was thinking is we get wrapped up in the infrastructure, and it's fun to acquire, and it really is nice to use, but. Yeah, you don't need any of it, really.
No.
Down to brass tacks, you really just don't need any of it. You can stitch it. You know, even for needlepoint, any of them. I mean, all of it was done without any of that long ago. So, Yep, that's enough.
Yeah.
I think so. So Sunday, our guest is Tanya. I think I got that right this time because I had it wrong. Tanya Brockmeyer of the Scarlet House. Reproduction samplers, but she also designs her own things, her own objects. And
yes.
We just had, that was fun.
It was. Yeah. It was. We had a great conversation.
Yep. So, she she's out in Chandler, Arizona, and worked at the attic. So there's a good, unusual proportion of promotion for the attic as we talk through the thing, but that's
it's
okay.
It's not even, it's just because, you know, that's what it is. The attic is the attic. So,
So that's coming up Sunday. Good one. A lot of fun with that one.
Yes.
So, yep. That's it. We're out. Thanks for listening.
All right. Take care.